what you want, tell me what you see, where you wanna go, what you wanna be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, devil need advice. Someone's gone before, maybe talk to them. Then after you do, go and talk to him. Great, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight. Take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends. Twitter, you the trend, him a Bentley Benz. But she moving kinda fast. Keep sweats, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last. But don't forget to have a blast.
Welcome to Time Out. I am your host, Sylvia Crawley Milbury, and tonight's show is very special to me personally because about a year ago, I married Reginald Milbury, who is a Master Sergeant in the United States Army, and at that time, I had no idea what I was signing up for. Military life is a whole different lifestyle from, you know, my normal civilian lifestyle. They have their own language, they operate on military time, they have their own grocery store, liquor store, they have what I refer to as the military Walmart, which is called the PX. So I've learned how to fold clothes differently and clean the house differently and cook with lots of pepper and hot sauce on everything. So during my first week of marriage, my husband called home and said to me, "Meet me at 1300 at one stop with your CC, SS, and DOB." And I thought to myself, what in the world is he talking about? Now, since that time, I've become very active, and I've met I've met many Army wives through Zumba and Aqua Zumba and Zumba Centaur. So I've learned that your CC is your credit card, your SS is your Social Security, your DOB is your date of birth, and I've learned how to tell military time, but it's been quite the transition for me. I attend many concerts and events that are provided through the military, one of which was a book signing at the Bar Library at Fort Knox. Now, to my surprise, they were having a free book signing with author of Undaunted and Army Wives, right? And I will never forget it because I was on my way home one evening from Zumba when I saw the advertisement for it. And I was sweaty and smelly, but I thought maybe I can buy her book and have her sign it real quick and not stay too long since I'm you know, in my Zumba clothes. So I went and I heard her speak and I thought to myself, what a great person to have on my show. So my next thought was that I'm completely unprepared to approach her. I have on Zumba clothes, I'm sweaty, I don't have a business card. She's going to think I'm crazy. So I went in anyways, I bought the book, I had to stand in line, but they made an announcement that the library was going to close in 15 minutes. So I knew if I got in the back of the line, it was a long line. So I thought to myself, if I get in the back of this line, they're going to cut the line short and say that the library is closing and I'm sorry, you know, the people in the back, you aren't able to get your book signed. So I saw one of my friends from Zumba halfway up the line. So I went to her and I said, "Hey, girl, I didn't see you at Zumba today." And she started explaining why she didn't make it to Zumba. And I know at 6'5", it's hard to cut the line without people seeing you. But I had to do it. So as we approached the front of the line, I thought to myself, okay, Sylvia, you have exactly 5 minutes to tell her who you are and convince her to come on your radio show. So before I knew it, it was our turn next. I took a deep breath and I said, "Hi, my name is Sylvia Crawley and I host a radio show called Time Out and I would love to interview on my show about your story. Is there a way that I could get in touch with you?" Like I said that in all one breath without taking a pause. And finally she looked at me with the most piercing grayish hazel color eyes and said, "Sure." And she told me how to get in touch with her and here we are today. It is my honor and my pleasure to have with us Tanya Bianco on the show. Tanya, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. I had no idea you had come straight from Zumba. You look fantastic. I never would have imagined that. And I have to tell you, I still get messed up with military time. And I've been around the military my entire life, and it still confuses me. So don't feel bad about that.
What's funny is that I got a yes from you. I got a book. I got two books, actually. I got Undaunted and Army Wife. And I also got a picture of you, and you autographed my book. And then the picture, my face is looking like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe she said yes. So I took it to my Zumba class and showed everyone. And they were like, oh, my goodness, let us know when she's going to be on the show. So they are all listening tonight. They have posted it on the Fort Knox Zumba site, and my Zumba teacher actually PCS'd to another area, so she posted it on her site, and it's been at Fort Meade and Fort Hood and Fort McCoy and everywhere. So you have a lot of supporters.
Oh, now, well, that's exciting. I had a great visit to Fort Knox. I really did. It was great meeting everybody that night.
You did, and I thought you did an outstanding job of speaking. It was a small, little intimate room. It was very hot in the room, and I thought you did a great job.
It was hot. Oh, and remember that big fan they had?
Uh-huh.
It didn't do much, but it was. It was very, very hot, and that was quite a long day. I had been up since 2:30 in the morning to catch my flight that day, but I was feeling good by that night, so all went well.
Good. Now, tell me, what was it like growing up as a military kid for you?
You know, it wasn't always easy. My dad was in the Army. He was in the Army for 30 years, and he did not retire from the Army until I was out of college when he retired. So it was really my whole young life. I was always kind of on the shy side, and I was one of those kids who didn't like change. I didn't adapt very well to a change in my environment, and that's a part of military life, moving from one location to another every few years. Going to new schools, that was always kind of traumatic for me, and it usually took me a year or more to adjust just when it was about time to move again. But as an adult, when I look back at my childhood, I don't have any regrets. The Army experience enriched my life in many ways. And I think a lot of military brats, that's our nickname for a military kid, a military brat, I think a lot of them would tell you something similar, that the people we are today, it's because of our military upbringing.
Okay. So I it's really crazy to me that you have to move so much, and you said that it took you about a year and a half to adjust to, you know, new friends, new classes, new neighborhood, and by then it's, you know, your father probably got a promotion. It was time to move to the next place, and so, you know, a lot of people don't really think about the toll that the military life takes on the family members of those who serve in the military for our country. So that was interesting to hear your take on that. Now, you attended college at Penn State, and did you major in journalism at Penn State, Tanya?
I did. I majored in journalism. I thought it was a way to make a living from writing, you know. It was a way to write and also eat three meals a day. And so at the time, I didn't know a lot about journalism, but I knew it involved writing, and that's what I wanted to do.
Now, we had a guest on the show last week who he has a romance novel out and is a best-selling author. And he thought it was better that he didn't study writing in school. He said that something to the effect that since he wasn't taught to write in a certain way, it was easier for him to find his own voice. What is your opinion about that, and how has the School of Journalism prepared you for what you do today as a journalist and an author?
Well, there's a lot of different kinds of journalism, and of course, in college, when you're going through journalism school, there is a certain style that you have to learn about how to cover the news. And so I knew I loved to write, but I had to learn to love the news cycle and to work on to write on a deadline. But I really think my background in journalism made me a better writer. And there is a lot of room in journalism for the creative side. And that has come out in the books that I've written, because they're what we consider nonfiction narratives. And a lot of journalists who write books will do that kind of writing, nonfiction narratives. They're true stories, but we use a lot of elements that have a novelistic approach. So, you know, every writer is different. But I really do think that my background as a journalist helped me when I wrote my books. And I learned how to interview people. You know, that's an important aspect too. If you're doing even if you're doing a novel, if you have to do research, you still have to interview people. And and so my background in journalism helped with that.
Well, maybe you can help me with that part, because I interview people quite a bit, and I major in communications, and I double major in radio and TV motion pictures. But I never thought I would be doing this. So I'm getting a lot of practice, and maybe you can help me with that at another time. But you talked a little bit about being a military kid and growing up within that lifestyle, and now you are the mother of two military brats yourself, if I may call them that. My question is, are there things that you try to shield them from or guide them through having gone through being a military child yourself?
Sure. Yes. You know, my kids are young. My son turns 7 in a few weeks. My daughter just turned 2. But with my son, we've already moved 4 times in his short life, and I try to explain to him what my mother tried to explain to me, that home is where the family is, and with deployments, we're still a family even when we're apart, and so we're just constantly trying to reinforce that with my son, because we just moved this summer, and it was our 3rd move in 3 summers. So he's had a lot of change, and he was very happy where we were living before and loved his school and his friends and didn't understand why we had to move. And I think as military parents, you know, with your kids, as they get older, every stage is going to be different in their development. But I think if we can just reinforce to them that as long as we're together as a family, you know, that's home. And even when we're separated because of deployments, we're still a family. We still love each other.
Wow. I like that. As long as you're together as a family, that's home. So home's not a physical place. Home is, you know, the people within your family. That's a good concept and a good way, I think, to explain it. Can you tell us your route? Did you start at Fort Knox? I know you went to elementary school at Fort Knox, but can you tell us your route that you took, like each place you moved to until you started your career, or until maybe your first job or first internship?
Oh, my goodness. It would just crisscross all over the place and overseas. It's a lot. It would be a lot of different places. Up and down the East Coast, over to Germany and England and Korea, and just all over. But I do consider myself an East Coast girl. My family, we were never stationed out west for some reason. I think Fort Knox was, you know, the farthest we had gone in that direction. But, you know, many different places, many experiences, you know, some better than others. But, you know, you got to take the good with the bad.
Do you find that it's easy now for you to adapt to new people, new circumstances, new surroundings because of your childhood as a military kid?
Absolutely. Because I really was kind of an introvert growing up, and I don't think I would characterize myself like that today. I really enjoy meeting people. I've been inspired by so many people that I've met in the military community, and I now look forward to moving from one place to another. I think a lot of military spouses will tell you that. It kind of gets in your blood. And because I'm not from any particular place, I kind of look forward to the next adventure. You have to look at it that way, or you're going to be miserable in military life if you don't look at it as an adventure and look forward to the next place that you're going to go.
Right. So that sparks a question. When people ask you where you're from, what do you say?
I say I'm an Army brat, and I think a lot of military brats will respond that way because if you pick a certain place, I think all of us have tried to pick a place, maybe somewhere that we really enjoyed, then people will start asking more questions, and then eventually it's going to come out anyway that you're a military kid, that you were a military kid and that you really weren't from that one spot. So,
yeah.
But sometimes when you answer like, oh, I'm an Army brat, people will say, oh, but where were you born? But for many of us, that doesn't really matter because, like in my case, I was born in Pennsylvania, but then 9 months after that, my family, we moved to Germany. So I've never been I don't have any, memory of my birthplace, of the town where I was born.
Right. Now, I have a friend who is also a military brat. But she, when I was in coaching, she also coached. And so we would have to recruit players, to be on our team. And you meet players who are from all over the country, And so we had this ongoing joke about wherever she was recruiting a kid, she would say, oh, I'm from Minnesota too. And then I'd hear her talk to another recruit, and she'd say, oh, yeah, I'm from Chicago. And finally one day I said, wait a minute. Where are you from? She's like, too, I'm a military brat. I'm from all over. So it just depends on where you're from. That's where I'm from.
That's true. There's a saying amongst military brats that we're strangers everywhere, strangers nowhere. And
wow.
And that's really telling. That's really telling. Strangers everywhere, strangers nowhere. Because we're not from any particular place, but we've been everywhere, too. A piece of us are in many places, I guess you could say.
Strangers everywhere, strangers nowhere.
Yes.
I'm keeping notes. Okay, so when I got a chance to hear you speak at Fort Knox, you talked about, and I thought this was so interesting, but you talked about an internship that you did at Fort Bragg, and this was in the earlier stages of your career. And, when you look up people on the internet, like let's say if people are in Wikipedia, if you make it to Wikipedia, you pretty much have an extensive resume. So when you do a search on Google for you, it's pretty incredible, like your resume and the things that you've done and been able to do. But I think that it is those timeout moments, those difficult moments in your life that build character and make you into who you are. And it's unfortunate that people who are Googling you never get to hear about your start and the grassroots efforts that it took to get the types of books that you're writing now. So talk about your earlier stages of your career, and particularly your internship at Fort Bragg.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Sylvia, that you would call it the early stages of my career because I was trying to get a career. I was just, I was just dreaming at that point. I was out of college. I had this journalism degree, but I didn't have any experience. And I went overseas. I was overseas, actually, for about a year and a half. I got a scholarship. I got a Fulbright grant, and I went overseas to Korea, and I taught English for a year. I lived with a Korean family on a little island, and then traveled all around after that. But when I came back to the States, I had no money, and I showed up on my sister's doorstep. My sister is in the Army, and at that time she was stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. And although I had a wonderful time overseas, there was just in the back of my mind, there was just this nagging little feeling that I had that, okay, it's time. It's time to do what you set out to do. And that is, you know, I wanted to be a news reporter. And so sent out a bunch of, you know, resumes, got a bunch of, rejection slips or rejection letters in the mail. And this was all in the days, you know, before there was email. It was only snail mail. And so I had a lot of enthusiasm, but I didn't have any experience. And I realized that it was a tough business to break into. It was a business that valued experience more than a degree in the field. Mm. And of course, this was 20 years ago. So there I was at my sister's. I didn't have a car. I didn't have anything. No money. I'd spent it all overseas. And so I moved in with her, and I was waitressing in the evenings and on weekends, and couldn't get a job in journalism. And one day I went to the Post newspaper on Fort Bragg. Most military installations have their own weekly newspapers. Just walked in, and at that time it was the paper was housed in an old World War II barracks building. And I just introduced myself, and I said that, you know, I would like to work for free for them. And they said, sure, they were happy to have, you know, free help. And after 6 months, I finally landed a job at a small weekly paper that wasn't, too far away. But I was this little paper's second choice. They had hired someone else. And I guess it didn't work out after a week after they had hired someone else. That person had quit, and I got this frantic call from the editor saying, can you start on Monday? And,
oh, my goodness.
I said, sure, yeah. And that's how I broke into the business. And eventually, you know, I got my own place, moved out of my sister's. I lived above a garage in someone's backyard, kind of like Fonzie. And here I am today.
Wow.
That's
what
how it's very, a very humble, very humble very humble start. And I think a lot of young people today, they want everything now. They want to land their dream job, and they want boom, 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 all these things in a row. And, you know, it doesn't happen like that for most people. It certainly didn't happen that way for me.
Right. Now, from Fort Bragg, where did you go next? What was the next stop for you?
Well, yeah. So I left that paper at Fort Bragg, and then I worked for various newspapers in the area, and eventually I got my dream job of covering the military right outside of the Post, and did that, and then had the opportunity to do a book. And so, you know, that's how it kind of happened for me. I was on Good Morning America discussing a story that I some stories that I was working on, military related stories about the Fort Bragg Army wife murders that had happened at Fort Bragg back in 2002. And a literary agent saw that interview, emailed me and said, have you ever thought of writing a book about military life? And so the seed was planted. There was an opportunity there. There was a knock on the door, I guess you could say. And there was
Wow.
a lot of hard work after that. Opportunities doesn't guarantee. I learned that an opportunity that isn't a guarantee for anything. It is simply an opportunity, and whether we're going to take it or not. But usually there's a lot of work behind every opportunity that comes our way.
Right. There's a quote that says, opportunity, most people miss opportunity because it's usually behind a door marked push. Which
oh, wow.
means, you know, there's there's a, you know, you've got to put some effort into it. And if
I like
people
that.
See that there's
that.
Effort, they don't want to open that door. They don't want to go that route.
I
so they miss
not,
it.
Yeah, I like that quote. I've never heard that before. Yeah, and that that is true. Yeah, I'm living proof of that. That's definitely true.
Yeah, I'm the quote queen. I love quotes. So
well, you know, they help
everything.
Us through life. They really do.
They do. They really do. Now, okay, so basically someone came to you and said, hey, did you ever think about writing a book about, you know, the life of Army wives? And so here you have this thought in your mind. So what happened between then and you actually writing the book?
Yeah, it, you know, for a nonfiction book, you have to do what's called a book proposal first. If you're writing a novel, you write your whole manuscript first, and then you hope that you're able to, you know, sell it to one of the publishers or your agent can get you a contract. But with a nonfiction narrative, you do a very detailed thing called a book proposal. It's kind of like a college thesis, I guess. It could be more than 50 pages, that's really just as hard as actually writing the book. And at first, the idea kind of evolved to write it about Army wives. It didn't start off that way. It just started off as an idea about military life. And you can tell a story about military life through a lot of different perspectives, through the eyes of soldiers. That's usually, at that time at least, that's how it had been done. And then eventually the idea came to, well, how about through the eyes of military wives. And so it took a couple years. It really did. And once I got the book contract, most book contracts are for a year, and that's what my contract was. And then it's really, I got to tell you, Sylvia, it's not a moment to celebrate once you get a book contract.
It's not?
It's a moment. I got to tell you.
I've been waiting for that celebration.
Oh, it's a moment of fear. And okay, I've got to do this, because if you in your contract, and everybody in every author's contract, there's, if you read the fine print, it says that if the manuscript is not suitable for publication, then the publisher has the right to terminate your contract. So it's a lot of pressure. I would just say that the pressure is on, and I felt the same way, you know, when I did my second book as well. It's kind of like, uh-oh, you know, I've got to do this. And there's no one else that can do it for you. You have to do it.
Right.
It's a very solitary, lonely process, book writing.
Wow. I was looking forward to celebrating once my book was finished.
I know, and I had envisioned, too. I had envisioned, getting a book contract, woohoo! And no, it's like you feel this pit in the bottom of your stomach.
Wow. Now, let's go back to the 50 pages. Why did you say doing a proposal of 50 pages or more is actually harder than the book?
Yeah, it's just as hard, because the book proposal is basically it's the marketing tool that your agent is going to take to the publishers. And if it's not just right, and a publisher says, nope, not interested, we're going to pass, you can't make a few changes and then submit it a second time to the publisher. They will not look at it again. So here you've just put a year's worth of work into this book proposal. And if it's not just right, and the publisher's like, nope, and let's say, you know, there's only so many publishers that are interested in it, they all say, nope, all that work was for naught. And so it has to be just right. And because your agent will not send out that book proposal until he or she feels that he or she can actually get you a contract. And so there's a lot of rewriting and changing things and getting the language of it just right. There's a lot of pieces to it. It's a very frustrating process.
Now,
I found it
is
to
the
be.
You found it what?
I found it to be both times just a very frustrating process.
Now, is the proposal, is it a summary of the whole book? So you've got to just kind of encapsulate almost all the book mm-hmm. into these mm-hmm. 50 pages, or is it just the first kind of part of your book, but interesting enough to, like, reel in the publishers that you're going to promote this to?
There are different pieces of it. Yes, parts of it are just a summary, but there's a lot of different parts of, you know, why are you the right person to write this book? That's a piece of it. Why do you think that this is going to be marketable? And if, why is this book going to sell? Why is anyone going to read this book? Because, again, the book business is exactly that. It is a business. And
right.
the publisher wants to make money. They want to sell books. And they want to do it on a national level. So that's a piece of it. So you really have to, yeah, you've got to have your, just the theme of it. All those things have to be there. And it has to be just so. And some of these publishers, they might start reading the first few pages and be like, nope, pass. So it's got to be.
So you really
got to
grab them in the beginning.
You got to grab them, yeah. And sometimes you can even include, like, if you've done, like, a first chapter or something to give them an idea of the writing style, what you're going to write about.
Right. Now, when you wrote Army Wives, what message did you want to get across to the readers?
Well, I wanted them to really understand what military life, military families, military marriages entail, and that really that in a military marriage is just not you and your husband; it's you, your husband, or you, your spouse, and the military. Those three entities mm-hmm. Make up a military marriage, and sometimes the military has to come first. The military mission has to come first. Who would choose, you know, to have your spouse, miss your son or daughter's birthdays during two consecutive years? You know, no one would choose
right.
something like that. Do you really want to spend your wedding anniversary alone again? Things like that, but we have no control over it. And that, those are examples of the military mission, coming first. But I also wanted to show the compassionate side of the military. And actually, that's something that was important to me in both books, in Army Wives and also in Undaunted, to show the compassionate side of military life and military people. I think military people are among the most compassionate people that I've ever met, and that's because it takes a compassionate person to put a nation of families before their own families, and that's a sacrifice that our military families, our service members, they make that sacrifice. For all of us, for all Americans.
Wow. So you're an Army wife yourself, and I often say that one of the toughest jobs in the military are military spouses. How do you balance your career, raising kids, and being supportive of your husband's military career, and, like you said, putting the country above your family even? How do you balance all that out?
Some days I don't do a very good job of balancing it all, and I know I'm not alone in this. It's hard for military spouses to wear so many hats and keep all the balls in the air. I think it's hard for a lot of women to do that because most of us wear so many different hats between kids and careers and. But the military, it's a unique way of life. It's a unique way of life. And like I said, you know, the military mission has to come first sometimes. But the best advice I was given came from a Marine Corps wife. She had gotten her MBA, and then she started her own business. She helped other spouses, military spouses, to grow their own businesses. And she did all this while she had young kids, and she was dealing with deployments. And she told me that you can do many things, you can do everything, but maybe just not all at the same time. There are seasons in our life, and there's when we're in a certain season, it might be the time that you can balance, you know, your career and your kids and moving and military responsibilities that you might have as a spouse. But there's other times when you're not going to be able to do everything, and that's okay. That's okay is what mm-hmm. is the takeaway from that.
Wow. I'm into multiple streams of income, and I'm a firm believer that once you get, I mean, if you're doing something, and once you get it to the point where it doesn't necessarily need you to operate from day to day, then it's okay to move to the next thing. But if you don't have things operating where you have to be hands-on every day and you're the website manager, you're the workers, you're the owner, you're the accountant, you're doing everything for that company or for whatever it is you're doing, I think it's very hard to do something else in addition to that. But
yeah,
once
but
you get
right.
things kind of running smoothly, I think it's okay to move to the next thing. But I like this advice that someone gave you that you can do many things and you can do everything, just not all at the same time.
Right.
I think that's good advice to keep yourself balanced. Tanya, there's a lot of shows that are based off of books. You know, you have The Help, Color Purple, MASH, just to name a few, as well as Army Wives. Did you ever imagine that your book would actually turn into a hit television show?
No, I never did. It was never even a possibility that had entered my mind. It's not something that I pursued or knew anything about. I just wanted to write a book about military life and get it published. That would have been plenty for me, but the seed was planted for a show when a film agent in California, she had read a blurb about the book in a trade publication about forthcoming books, and she had requested a copy of my book proposal, which we talked about earlier, for my literary mm-hmm. agent. And so that was like a first step, and then she got that book proposal into the hands of somebody at Touchstone TV, and they ended up optioning the book. And from there, the process started with a screenwriter. She did a screenplay. That turned into a pilot, and then Lifetime TV picked up the pilot. And here we are, you know, 7 years later, Army Wives ended up being the number one rated drama for women on cable and is among the five longest running dramas in cable history. And, you know, we got some sad news last week that Army Wives has been canceled after seven seasons. And while it is bittersweet, I really am have nothing but fond memories and am really celebrating the difference that the show made in so many people's lives. And I know it made a difference because of all of the military spouses that I have met or who have contacted me and have told me what the show has meant to them. It was certainly a show that was it was much more than just entertainment to many people who watched.
Well, I'm one of many who's very sad that the show will no longer continue. However, I think it says a lot that it ran for seven seasons, and that, you know, is history within cable history. So I think that I want to thank you just for answering the call to write this book, you know, and And I know that there are some people, I mean, it's hard to tell everyone's story. So there are probably some people who feel like the show doesn't really give a true representation of Army Wives. Do you ever catch any people saying that, you know, I don't think this is how it really is for military, or, you know, have you gotten any negative response from the show?
You know, it's been a long, long time. I think when the show was brand new during the first season and people didn't know what it was going to be about, and maybe they had just seen snippets of it or one episode, but I think the thing to remember about Army Wives, the show, is that it's a drama, and it's a TV drama, and, you know, you're going to have embellished situations and high conflict. You have to. It's TV, but the interesting thing is even with all the high drama, guess what we have in real military life a lot of times? We have high drama and embellished situations that are real life. So it really wasn't always that, you know, far off base. But I think that I was a consultant on the show, and I think that my greatest contribution was I tried to make sure that the episodes were authentic to real military life, and I understood that the writers, they had a creative mission that they had to fulfill. So what we ended up doing was really blending authenticity and creativity, and it was a real privilege for me to work with the writers and producers. They were just wonderful professional people, and they really tried hard to get it right. Most of them did not come from a military background. They lived in Los Angeles and in Hollywood and didn't know a lot about the military, but they tried very hard with each season to learn as much as they could. They visited every season. They would visit a different military base, and they would just soak up information, and they really wanted to get it right, and I think the show did. They tried very hard to be respectful of military people while still taking on some very difficult, you know, real-life themes and things that real military people experience.
Well, my husband was actually a critic of the show because I was excited about watching it because I felt like, oh, this is Army Wives, I'm an Army wife. And he was like, don't watch that show. That's not really what happens in the military, you know. And as I watched, I found it personally to be very helpful, the topics that it touched on, because going through things, I felt so alone. You know, I live in the middle of nowhere. We don't live on a base, so we're away from the base. So I don't have other Army Wives where I can ask questions and just kind of see what's going on in their lives to see, like, oh, this is normal because they're going through it too. So we're off in the country by ourselves, and so I just was going through this, you know, transition into the military alone. And as I watched the show, I would see different topics. I would see different things that I was going through as well. And I suddenly felt not so alone by watching the show. And my husband watched a few episodes with me, and he changed his mind about the show. You know, he didn't feel like, oh, the show is not how it really is. You know, there were some very true topics, some topics that I felt like needed to be addressed and showed, and show the world, like, this is what people go through, and this is what our lives are like, and not everybody, but this particular character is what they went through, you know. And so you can watch it and see how you would handle that situation should you ever go through it, you know. So I found it to be very helpful and very accurate in my life, you know, just situations that I go through. So,
I'm glad to hear that. And it's funny that, you know, just from your, you know, your husband's perspective, Sylvia, because, you know, Lifetime is known as the women's network, and they were never going after a male audience with Army Wives. But what happened after the first season, women were tuning in, Their husbands were not, but since it aired, you know, Sunday evenings, their husbands started to watch the show with their wives and got hooked on the show. And so couples started watching the show together, and Lifetime had gained this male viewership over the years. So, and a lot of men, by the end, I would say that a lot of men, you know, they were not embarrassed to admit that they were watching Army Wives on Lifetime. I can't tell you the number of men in uniform, if I was at a book signing, that would say, oh, I don't miss an episode. So it was a lot of fun. I always enjoy hearing from our servicemen.
I think that's huge, because there are a lot of men who just, they don't want to deal with Lifetime Channel because they feel like it's male bashing and it's always about men kidnapping women and abuse and all this stuff. So they don't like Lifetime Channel.
Right.
So to get them to tune into the show, that's huge.
I'm not kidding
now,
when I said, I heard from sergeants to generals who told me they didn't miss an episode of Army Wives.
Wow. Now, how is the show different from your book? I mean, I read a lot of books, and then I go to the movie, and I'm usually disappointed because I feel like the book was better, you know, or it was different, or they took certain parts out, but they really missed this part. So how is the show different from your book, in your opinion?
Oh, quite different. You know, the show certainly took on a life of its own over the years. To be able to sustain a weekly series requires a lot of creativity on the part of the writers. If you think back to MASH, MASH was based on a doctor's memoir, and no doubt the show, you know, was quite different from the book. So the book it's nonfiction, but the show is fiction. Although, like we discussed, it deals with real-life themes and scenarios affecting military families. Early on, I was interviewed by a writer with TV Guide, and she told me that I was one of the few authors she's interviewed who liked how her work has been depicted on the screen. And I think that's because I went into it knowing that it was going to be quite different. And I just think that because the show has been so respectful of military life, and they've tried so hard to get it right, and they've dealt with so many issues that affect real military families, that it's been wonderful. So yes, the writers would take certain ideas from the book, and then they would use their own creativity, and they would build upon that. So the two are pretty different from each other.
Well, our lines are lighting up. So if you are just joining us, you're listening to Time Out with Sylvia Crowley. I am sitting here chatting with Tanya Bianc, who is the author of Army Wives as well as Undaunted. Tanya, what this show is called, obviously, Time Out with Sylvia Crowley. And so on the show, I interview people from all career paths, but I highlight those timeout moments that have caused you to pause, assess the situation, correct some things, regroup, and resume with an opportunity to perform better, which is what happens in most sporting events. But I've kind of tagged this whole concept of timeout moments, which really means your most challenging or some wilderness seasons that you've gone through. What would you consider your greatest timeout moment?
Well, a month after landing my second book contract for Undaunted, I found out I was pregnant, and I had a year deadline to turn in my manuscript, and I knew that the year ahead would also involve two military moves for my family. We call those PCS moves, permanent change of station. I had a good feeling that I was going to come down with morning sickness because I had with the first time around, and sure enough, I did. And so as my belly grew, so my anxiety also grew. And I didn't know if I could really birth a book and a baby. And I was filled with fear. I was filled with fear. The baby was coming, and I was committed to doing this book. people were counting on me, and I really felt alone, really alone. The pressure was on, and because I knew that nobody else could have the baby for me, and nobody could write this book for me, which I had just spent the previous year trying to get this contract with the book proposal. You know, I had to do this. I had to pull through it. And I remember probably my worst moment. We had just moved. I was 7 months pregnant, and we had just moved in. We were in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. We were in a tiny house that we were living on post. And it was filthy. The place was just filthy. Whoever had lived there before didn't clean it. And our movers had just come. We had all this stuff surrounded by boxes. And my book was due in a few months. The baby was coming in a couple months. And I just started crying. I started bawling. And it's not like me to do that. And my husband's like, he just looks at me like, what are you doing? What's wrong? And it all just came out, Sylvia, at that moment. And I said, how am I going to do this? I knew that that it was impossible to get the book done. I didn't have enough time to get it finished. Mm-hmm. And because I was writing about military women, their schedules were difficult. They're all active duty. One was deployed to Afghanistan. I mean, they're all over the place, and their time was limited. And I was in a bad spot. And but somehow I had to keep my, other than crying on my husband's shoulder, I kept my insecurities to myself, and I had to move forward and find a way to get this done. And you know, I like quotes too, and Eleanor Roosevelt has one. I'll just kind of paraphrase it, but her one quote talks about when you stop and you got to look fear in the face, and you must do the thing you think you cannot do. And that's actually a quote I put in my book, Undaunted, and it certainly applied to my own situation as well. And I find it ironic that the book is called Undaunted, because I was certainly daunted trying to get everything done. But in the end, I did accomplish both tasks. I had my baby girl, and I got the book done. I had asked for a 3-month extension, and it was still difficult. I could have probably used an extra 6 months, but it the way I got it done is through my husband's help of helping me with childcare with our kids. My parents traveled to help me also with my kids, and I managed to turn in my book manuscript at midnight the day before it was due. I remember pushing the send button on it. That was a big moment for me.
Wow. How long did it take to press that button?
It took a while. I didn't do it right away. It was one of those where my finger was right over, you know, the send button, and I thought, am I ready? Is it good enough? Am I really going to do this? Is it going to go through? You know, so, but you know, the women that I profiled, the four service women that I profiled in Undaunted, they were the ones who taught me as I was struggling, even though I didn't share with them that I was struggling, but I learned from them through their own example that with determination and commitment and yes, courage, it took a lot of courage, that we can all achieve things even under the most difficult of circumstances.
Now, you talk about the four women that you discuss in Undaunted. Can you give us a brief description of each one?
Yeah, they were really just amazing women. The four women were all quite different from each other. They range in age from the early 20s to their 50s. They rank from the junior enlisted ranks to general officer rank. But what they have in common is a drive and determination to succeed and to reach their goals despite very significant and sometimes extraordinary obstacles. And so I wanted to I wrote this book because I really wanted to give a behind-the-scenes look at the sacrifice behind their achievements. And the first servicewoman is General Salinas, who is the Marine Corps' first female Hispanic general. And when I heard that General Salinas had founded her women's college basketball team, and she was a team captain also, despite being only 5 feet tall, I knew she had to be someone who was pretty incredible. And I it came as no surprise that she's held many firsts as a woman in the Corps. The second woman, Lieutenant Bergen Flanagan, 22-year-old babyface, introvert. She's a new officer in the Army. She wanted to go to airborne school, although she had never been on an airplane in her life. And really, at this point in her life, she's what I would refer to as a girl woman. She deploys to Afghanistan with her favorite stuffed animals and her favorite candy, Laffy Taffy. Yet she's tough and she's determined, and she's leading troops as a platoon leader on the front lines. And I don't want to give her away her story, but she has been to hell and back. And the third service.
So she has timeout moment.
Oh yeah, you know they all have. You know, I would love for you to interview some of these women. They would be perfect for your show because they all of these women have had more than one timeout moment. Major Candace O'Brien is the third woman. She juggles marriage, motherhood, and the military. I describe her as a brainy 33-year-old redhead who can outthink her fellow officers in the plans room and outrun them on the track. She's a West Point graduate. She's a hard-charging overachiever. When she deploys to Afghanistan, she leaves behind two young children and a marriage that is in trouble. And what I liked about her story is that it represents, you know, so many mothers who are in dual military marriages, dual military meaning where the husband and wife are both serving in the military. And, you know, how does she keep it all together and all the balls in the air? And, you know, and that's something that I look at. Can military women really have it all? It's something I look at. And last but not least is Sergeant Amy Stokely. She's a Marine Corps drill instructor. I refer to her as a diva in boots because she fancies false eyelashes. She's got her acrylic French tip nails. She wears lipstick. But she also has a martial arts black belt, and she's earned a combat action ribbon in Iraq. She survived a number of IED attacks, one that resulted in a firefight. She loves to make her recruits cry. She makes sure that she looks darn good doing it. In the book I write, at Paris Island, beauty isn't bashful. It's bold and badass. And you know, her story, she comes from a humble start, and she's not the only woman in the book that just has a humble beginning. She starts off as a truck driver in the Marines, and she works her way up to the most revered position in the Marine Corps as a drill instructor. I like in her story that she taught her female recruits not only how to be good Marines, but how to be good women.
Hmm. Now, do you have to go through public affairs review since you use actual military people for your books?
The way it works, since I'm a civilian, but I am interviewing active duty, because these women are on active duty, the military, each of the service branches has a... There is a book clearing process, and actually for the Army, theirs is located in New York City. They have some people from the Public Affairs Office, I believe it's two or three people, who work there, and a part of their job is to read over just cover letters and to give permission to write the book and to interview the service members, just like if active duty service members are going to be interviewed for, you know, a newspaper or a magazine article, they have to give public affairs a heads up. And
right.
So the same thing with books. But no, the military does not read the manuscripts. I think if you have something like if you've got sensitive information, about maybe if you're covering a military unit from Iraq or Afghanistan, if there's anything sensitive in there, then I think maybe public affairs may request to read it or something like that, I think.
Okay. Now, we have a question. I'm going to ask our producer to put them through, but we have T from area code 254.
Yes, my name
Vic,
is
Tanya. Can you put her through? Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Tanya Hill, retired first sergeant down here in Killeen, Texas. And I just want to thank Tanya for bringing the Army Wives to television. It inspired a whole lot of service members here. And this show will definitely be missed by all the military families. And I also want to thank you for your continued support for all the military families.
Oh, thank you so much, ma'am. Your call really means a lot, and I want to thank you for your service.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. And if you have any other questions, feel free to press 1, and we'll put you back through. And thank you for that comment as well. Tanya, I wanted to ask you, can you talk about the timeline of your book, Undaunted, being released when it was, in regards to the military lifting their ban to allow women to go into combat?
Sure. It was quite the timing. Undaunted came out in early February of this year, and by pure chance, the book release coincided with the Defense Department's landmark announcement lifting the ban on women in combat. So it was really unbelievable. I ended up doing interviews on that topic 2 weeks before the book was officially released. So there was about a 10-day difference in the timing. So it was a publisher's dream, pretty much, because you just can't plan something like that.
Right. Now, a portion of the proceeds, I should say, from many of your book signing go towards supporting military families. Why was it important for you to do that?
Because at its heart, the military is about service, and the military community is all about supporting and taking care of each other. So most of the events I do are for a good cause. Rarely will you find me at a bookstore just signing books. Usually I'm tied in with people who are part of a nonprofit club or organization that helps others. I'm doing an event in October in Ohio that will support a women's shelter. It's a shelter for women who have been victims of domestic violence and their kids.
Right. Now, that leads me right into my next point. You're a volunteer for a lot of different organizations, and you volunteer your time to the military and to military community on a local and national level. What are some of the volunteer work that you've done, and which ones have you enjoyed the most?
Yeah, you know, a lot of military spouses volunteer, and they've always inspired me, and I've just been in awe of some of these women with what they have done and their creativity, their energy, what they've been able to accomplish, and the things that I have done have certainly paled in comparison to what so many of my neighbors and friends have done. But I've been an FRG leader, which during a deployment, which I would say was really tough to do, but also very important. For those who are listening who are not from the military, FRG is Family Readiness Group Leader, and you're kind of the liaison between the command and the families, getting the correct information to them during a deployment, and just bringing people together because we're all in it together. So that was a tough assignment, but I'm glad that I did it, and I've served on various boards over the years, but probably one of the most rewarding was last year. I volunteered in my son's kindergarten class. I helped the kids, worked with the kids one-on-one, and it was a ton of fun. I think it was you know, more rewarding to me than to them. But tomorrow I start volunteering at my son's new school, and I'm going to be in the cafeteria. I'm going to be one of the lunch moms, so wish me luck with that. That all goes well.
Well, I think it's pretty cool that you still do volunteer work, and given all of your appearances and responsibilities as a mother and an Army wife, that you volunteer. And, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, they go through their tough times, but once they make it and become successful or write a successful book, then it's about them and, you know, kind of what they have to do. But I think it says a lot about you that you actually take time to volunteer and actually enjoy it. And what even come on my show, you know, this is a crazy Zumba person that walks up and says, "Hey, I need you on my show." And you say, "Sure, I'll do it." And here we are. So what's next for you, Tanya? Do you have any new books or projects in the near future?
Well, I continue to do guest speaking around the country, and right now I'm working on an essay that I'm contributing to a forthcoming book about advice from military wives. The paperback version of Undaunted, the real story of America's servicewomen in today's military, comes out in February 2014. There is going to be some updates to the book, as well as a foreword by Mark Thompson, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with Time magazine. And also there will be special remarks about Undaunted from Leon Panetta, the former defense secretary who lifted the ban on women in combat. And I'm sure I've got another, you know, book in me, so we'll see what happens.
Now, can you tell our listeners how they can keep in touch with you or keep up with your events and appearances?
Sure.
Do you have a website?
I do. Yeah, I have a website. It's www.tanyabianc.com. Most people won't know how to spell my name, but TANYABIANK.com. People can email me through that site.
And here's my last question, Tanya. How do you want to be remembered?
Yeah, you know, that is quite a question. I would love to be remembered as a good mother, a good daughter, wife, and friend. And these are the things that matter most to me.
Hmm. Well, I ask that question to many of my guests who come on the show, and it's interesting what people come up with. And so from the time that I met you at Bar Library, that question has been ringing in my head. I was interested to know what your answer would be, because it often what comes out in that answer are the things that are important to you. So, well, Tanya, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to share your story with us tonight. On behalf of Army wives all over the country, and I think it's safe to say on behalf of service women of service as well, I want to thank you for shedding light on some pretty heroic people who sacrifice their lives every day and who spend time away from their families to do what they do. And thank you for the sacrifices that you have made being part of a military family your entire life. And that's our time for this evening. Tune in next week for another interesting show. You can keep up with the show on my Time Out Facebook page. It's just called Time Out. You search for it on Facebook. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place. This is Time Out with Sylvia Crowley. Have a blessed week.
Tell me what you want. Tell me what you see. Where you want to go. What you want to be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise. Gotta have a plan. Double check it twice. Wait. Hold up. Slow down. Still gonna need advice. Someone's gone before. Maybe talk to them. Then after you do, go and talk to him. Wait, it's gonna come. Maybe not tonight. Take your time today. Teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends. Made a lot of ends. on Twitter, you the trendy. My Bentley Benz, but she moving kind of fast. Keep sweating, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last, but don't forget to have a blast.